It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Hope you're having a good day on a Saturday in the Golden Heart. Welcome to another episode of Alaska Tracks, where we listen to excerpts of oral history interviews with veteran hunters and pilots and trappers and guides. I'm Randy Zarnke, the host of your program. Today's featured guest is Fred Thomas, who lived in Fort Yukon. Fred was a very accomplished trapper and was especially known for his large catches of lynx. Fred eventually quit trapping at age 92. In this first segment of today's show, Thomas tells us about his youth in the northeastern interior and then shifts to talking about lynx, wolves, and wolverines. Pay attention, you'll learn a lot.
Well, I was born on May 11, 1919. And that fall, my father and mother lined up the porcupine up the Black River. Took them about 30 days, he said, to get up where they were going. They trapped up there that winter, and then they came back down the river in the spring with one boat. At that time, they were a lot of beaver. What they were doing, they shoot beaver, although it was against the law on the American side, you know. From what I understand, that one of the Canadian mounted police would come down here and he'd make a bunch of clearance for so many beaver, name some native up at Old Crow.
Did your family live up on the river then throughout the year, or did you move back
no,
and forth?
We come down around first part of June. Old man used to go back up about the 1st of August. Although later years, sometime we'd leave around 20th of July. A couple of years afterwards, he got outboard motor, one of these 3.5 single cylinder. And him and Paul Henry, they were partners at that time. And they had one piece and then they had one spare. Early in the spring up at the Salmon Village, they would take off just even ice coming down to hunt beaver up river.
So with that small motor, they were able to motor against the current?
Oh, heck, it had a lot of power. He had a great big poling boat. Him and Paul Henry, they're 2 tons. They took up from here up to Salmon Village and back in 4 days and 8 hours. It wasn't little, one of them long strokes. Right where the handle is, it point towards you, where the spark plug in. Oh, man, he had to fool around there, and oh, he used to cuss that thing. Once in a while, you touch that spark plug. About 4 years or so, we stayed at Salmon Village, and then he moved up closer to what we call Whitefish Lake.
Now, you keep saying up there.
This is up at the mouth of Grayling, Black River.
Do you still get up there?
I go up there every fall.
To go way back, I guess you learned a lot of your trapping and hunting skills from your father. Is that correct?
Some. And most of the time, I'll try almost anything.
Okay, so you were self-taught.
Yeah, so we were out all by ourselves.
I imagine up until just recently, you always were with dog team?
Yeah. First time I started really trapping, I had 6 dogs, you know. And I don't know, I'd have a cabin maybe about 15 miles apart. And then towards spring, you would be able to double that when you had a long daylight. The last time I used dogs, I used 7, sometimes 8 dogs, and they're much better than 5 or 6 dogs. Old man never used more than 5 dogs. And then when you've got little snow, you couldn't ride. 7 or 8 dogs, you could ride all the time.
So which did you like better? Did you like dogs or you like snow machines?
One thing with snow machine, you can go almost twice as far, but it leaves you out on a limb. If it breaks down, you ain't getting back that night.
How about cabin building? You must have gotten into that.
I always remember when I was 9, 10 years old, I guess. I go first trip with old man, you know. And when we get to where year after year he has the same place, we have to take the snow away and pitch up tent and all that. And I always said to myself, if I ever have a line, I'm going to build cabins. And as soon as I got started, I built a cabin a year, even 2 in a year. After a while, I had cabins on all the lines. Don't even take a tent out.
How big were these cabins?
7.5 to about 8 feet, I guess, square. Yeah. Pretty small. almost half of it would be a bunk where two guys could sleep foot to foot, just like, you know, pass one another. Underneath that, have where you put wood in, you know. In fact, one cabin that was so close to the stove, I could just lean down and put wood in the morning, you know.
And did you build the cabins yourself?
Well, a lot of time they'd be two of us, you know. I remember one time we took one dog and packed and went out not too far and camped there and built a cabin 3-4 days. I built a cabin one time. I left the house and went to where I was going to build cabin, and the fifth day I come back and I had a cabin built.
Well, I assume that you used to hunt your own moose for food.
Oh, yeah.
Any particular stories that come to mind there?
When I was a kid, there was not too many moose, you know. And I mean, we had to go up through the lakes and then come back down river. I don't know how many times we used to do that. And we generally got one moose or maybe two moose during the fall. Of course, now they just sit in the boat and go up and down the river, you know.
So it's easier now, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And did you eat a lot of fish?
Oh, yeah. Up where we are, we don't get no salmon, of whitefish, mostly grayling.
You're widely known as one of the best lynx trappers. Tell us a little bit about the best year you ever had.
Well, in the 50s, I remember quite a few lynx, and that year, well, we caught about 100 or so. One year, me and my brothers, we got 265 lynx. I always remember I picked out 100, 25 big males, 25 females, and 50 what I call yearlings, January or February, the young ones. They're good size then. And I sent them out to a New York auction sale. Grading sheet came back. 25 females, $2, $50. I think the highest was was $8. For the 100 links, we got $421. I didn't send no more to that outfit. I was keeping that paper, and then one time it flooded down the old house, you know, But I thought good many times I'd like to send a copy to the trappers. They say low fur prices. I remember not too long ago, about that time, I guess, or a little later, foxes, $3-4, that's all.
What's your favorite set? How do you like to catch your lynx?
I used to make big cubbies and put a duck wing with beaver caster in it, you know, and then put sticks around. But I started just using a post and put beaver caster on it and then put a trap in front of it and cover it with snow. Well, I would catch almost anything. And what we did is if we get a beaver in the fall, I save the guts, chop that up, and duck feathers or any kind of feathers, mix it all up. Then I shave green beaver caster, cut it up and mix the whole thing and throw a little around there. Most of the time I throw a piece of feather away from it. Fox come along, he'll fool around with that one where there's no tracks to it, and pretty soon he's where the trap is. We catch wolf, deadly set for wolverine, especially if it snows a little. I've caught marten in it, almost anything. It's more of kind of a universal set. You take a tree about that high. About
so
that
4 feet and buck, 4 inches in diameter.
Throw that loop over there and set it about that far from in front of it. Just where you want the link to sit down, well, right there you put beaver caster on. And I use nothing but the oil sack. You don't have to fool around with it to make a house. Mm-hmm. Oh man, that's all he used.
Now when you say we, was that you and your brother?
Up into the 50s, we all trapped as a family, even after I got married. When the oldest kid got to be 6 years old, I moved back down here, you know. That'd be in the late 70s, I guess, when I went back out. And Albert, my brother, he had a cabin just above me, about 3 miles or so. We had our own lines, it's like, but we were partners. I told him, I said, there's no use of having our own lines. Whatever we catch, we just split, you know. The first year, we just hit it just right. Rabbits was coming up, and lynx was coming up. The first year there, we got 83 lynx, I think. Mm-hmm. But we got about 80 marten and 60 mink. The next year, we got, I think, 135 lynx. Marten dropped down to 50. Third year, we got 215 lynx. Fourth year, we got 315. But that year, my son trapped too. He got through with school. And of course, if the lynx were up around 350 or so, I had two lynx I sent out. That was to one of the Canadian auction, and they put in there in Canadian money close to 1300. I remember telling Albert, I says, when you say the good old days, I said, it's right now.
Now, you haven't mentioned anything about snares for any of these animals. Do you ever use snares?
I use practically all snares now. I don't set one fox trap.
And why did you switch over from traps to snares?
They're much easier to maintain, and they don't cost much. I make my own snares. If I go up on top of the bank and I've got a lynx trap or a marten trap, I'll have two, three snares there in every little rabbit trail. I set lots in rabbit trail. Of course, this year there ain't no rabbit trails. You know?
Have you always made all your own snares?
No, I've bought some, but I started a long time ago making my own snares.
Well, how about some of the other fur bearer species? What's your experience with wolves?
Well, they're the hardest animal to catch, I know that.
You didn't say very much about wolves. What's your best luck? You use baited set or blind sets?
Well, with snares is best. There's a couple places I always take carcass there. Once they get started on that, unless it's buried completely, I just leave it there. I found out if you make a trail like that, they're scared of it. What I do is wherever there's a little opening or like that, I set maybe three, four snares, and then I take animal carcass and right around the middle. So once they get started, they will, of course, you know, they're fooling around, get one or two that way.
Well, I'm sure you've had the experience where you catch one wolf in a snare or a trap.
And another one eat it up. I remember reading about how crippled wolves were like that, they take care of it. I have never seen even an old wolf among a pack of wolves. All these lone wolves is old wolf. As soon as they can't keep up with the rest of wolf, he leaves or else they'll kill him. I have never caught crippled wolf among pack. I remember old man one time, he had a partner, and in October they went up the trail to where our neighbor come down. And on the way, he said they see about five or six wolves. When they got into the portage there, oh, there was a heck of a mess around there. And they dragged something off. And he said they went there and there was a pup wolf there. I thought of it, that was the same family. Maybe a couple of them got into a fight and they jumped it. But there's a possibility that it might have been a lone pup wolf. Sometimes a young wolf will, for some reason, leave the whole pack. Or a couple of the wolves might have got in the battle, and then one wolf hollering. The dog's the same thing, you know. If one dog start hollering, the whole bunch goes in on them. I've heard stories about wolverines. They're easy to catch. Only thing is, once you catch them, it's hard to hold them.
Do you ever have a set that worked real good for wolverines?
I used to use moose hoof. I tie that up on the post and set a trap in front of it. Plus, I use beaver caster.
And what size traps would you use for the wolverine?
Fours if I have them. Well, I've caught them on threes too, but if you bury it, you know, threes is not too good.
It doesn't come up out of the snow that good.
Yeah.
This man had a wealth of knowledge, and it added to his success on the trap line. Let's take a break here for a few words from our sponsors. I appreciate our sponsors, and I hope you do too. Now back to our recording of Fred Thomas. In this next segment, he talks about all aspects of beaver trapping, marketing of furs, and then sums up his life in the great outdoors.
Now, you were talking quite a bit earlier on about your beaver trapping, and I imagine back in the early days, you would dig your holes with just a chisel?
Yeah, axe and chisel.
A lot of work there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I've opened up with just a shovel, too. When there's lots of snow, you can just see where the, especially if there's a family, you can see where it comes out and get close there, and you're just hitting the snow to go down, you know. So many beaver go back and forth. A lot of time I had to go over the chisel and do like that. And you can hear, if you listen close, you can hear when it's thin.
Yeah, the different sound, I mean, thick ice and thin ice.
And if there's been no overflow, I just go right in front of the beaver house towards the feed pile, and you can see where the bubbles comes out, and you know where to cut your hole, you know. Most of the time I make two sets, one on each side of the feed pile. And I use three sticks, and if you can feel the trail, I put 6 to 8 snares on one stick.
Now, if you were a long ways from your cabin and you caught a bunch of beaver, that'd be a pretty good load to haul back to the cabin.
Well, one fall, we went up, and I think we got 11 beaver on one line. And we had a little toboggan, and we went up there for 3 weeks. I was afraid that the toboggan would break when it goes over them log. I think I was the first one, at least up Black River, who started snaring beaver. Old man never snared beaver. What we used to do is make a kind of a ladder with two or three cottonwood, and then just underneath it we have a number three trap and tie the ring on both sides. And then underneath it we put a little piece of dry willow and tie that at the bottom so that they don't sag too far down. And I remember in the spring of the year when I'm hunting rats, any beaver house, I used to go around it and find the tunnel on both sides of the beaver house. And then the fall time, I do the same thing. And I had a little book that I had, and I know exactly where the tunnels are. Well, some of the beaver, they get little wives to your set. They just go around it. I remember we had some number two cleft lock. Old man got for wolf. That's the biggest snare we had at that time. Practically the only snare we had. He had a couple dozen like that. Well, I wrapped it around on both sides, and I made loops about that big.
So 2 feet across.
Yeah, and you know, I started catching the big beaver. So first year, I don't know, I didn't catch too many, but I caught a few, the big ones. So I thought, gee, that's the clear thing. So the next year, I got maybe three dozen snares, the swivels, and that's about that big.
12 to 15 inches.
Yeah, and then I started the heck with the trap, you see, but I didn't get no young ones. I think the first year there, I got a yearling. So the next year, I went to number four. I don't use bait. I don't use nothing, as long as you're in the tunnel. At that time, I get a bent willow. You dig a hole in front of where you think the tunnel is. You can feel it. And always there's a little depression. And I would put four snare underneath, four snare on top. And a good many time, I'd get two out of eight snares like that. Because most of the time, they'll come close to the bottom and get caught in, well, they tangle up right there, see? And they're hanging down there, and then the next beaver come out, they go over. Good many times I've caught two. Once in a while I've caught three beaver in one opening.
If you caught those a long ways from your cabin, would you skin them right there, or would you haul them back?
No, I always haul them back. One of the things I was going to say about that beaver, old man was saying he didn't think that when the beaver went down, it wasn't from shooting him so much. I've noticed if you have a flood in the fall time, all the feed, especially in the river, all the feed pile go down the river. A few years ago in the fall, there was a little cabin down the river quite a ways, and we landed there, cut some wood. I left traps there, a bundle of snares. I was going to go back there, and on the way back down, almost froze up with us up there. We just barely got to Talgeetsik, and I mean in the ice. And on the way down, there was some beaver house, not one green stick in front of me. It had got half bank full before that. I was going to go back up there, and when 1st of November came, oh, shuck, it was warm. And Sattler, he had a plane that time. I told him, I don't think it's any use of going up there. Well, he said, let's get in the plane, we'll fly around. And all the lakes had just stars, just like where the open holes, you know, yeah, all over. It just overflowed. It snowed quite a little bit, and I knew there was no use of going up there. Had I been able to go up there, I'd have made a killing with a beaver. Right at that one place where I get to the river where that cabin was, there's two beaver house just up above, and seven beaver house below, nine beaver house there. The next fall we went up there, and two great big beaver holes, been there for years, big hole in the top.
Oh, they chewed out.
Yeah.
Because they ran out of food.
In that length of place where there was nine beaver holes, there was only three beaver holes and two of them were new ones. Only one beaver house was in one of the old houses.
So you're thinking that if you'd have been there that winter, all those beaver would have been out and easy to catch?
I mean, all you had to do is dig one little hole and put a green willow down there, and you'd catch them till the last one was gone, you know.
And so your other point was that when the high water comes in the fall, washes out the feed cat, then they die over winter, that's the reason that the population goes down.
He says that one spring, they seen a lot of dead beaver. Well, the rats do the same thing. They get some kind of a disease and they wipe completely out. He figured that's what happened to the beaver, too.
Now, when was this?
Oh, shucks, around 1920s and even before that.
What's your favorite set? How do you like to catch your lynx?
I used to make big cubbies and put a duck wing with beaver caster in it, you know, and then put sticks around. But I started just using a post and put beaver caster on it and then put a trap in front of it and cover it with snow. Well, I would catch almost anything. And what we did is, if we get a beaver in the fall, I save the guts, chop that up, and duck feathers or any kind of feathers, mix it all up. Then I shave green beaver caster, cut it up and mix the whole thing and throw a little around there. Most of the time I throw a piece of feather away from it. Fox come along, he'll fool around with that one where there's no tracks to it, and pretty soon he's where the trap is. We catch wolf, deadly set for wolverine, especially if it snows a little. I've caught marten in it, almost anything. It's more of kind of a universal set. You take a tree about that high.
About so
that
4 feet and 4 inches in diameter.
Throw that loop over there and set it about that far from in front of it. Just where you want the link to sit down, well, right there you put beaver caster on. And I use nothing but the oil sack. You don't have to fool around with it to make a house. Oh man, that's all he used. John Swagler, he used to come over. Not so much in the winter time, but he used to come in the spring. Years ago, people never sold their fur during the winter.
No, just save it all till the
well,
end of the year?
Yeah. They come down with a boat with all their winter's catch. And then, of course, they had beaver or muskrats. They called them Johnny Muskrat, I remember.
So was he from Fairbanks?
Yeah.
And he would fly up?
Yeah, he'd get somebody to fly him here, mm-hmm. You know. Of course, all the storekeeper bought for N.C., Carter, and Jimmy Carroll. I found out something. A lot of guys, they used to bring the whole fur and they get one bid. I would separate all my fox, mink, marten, link. I did take separate bid on all of them. I found out that, like Jimmy Carroll, he bought fur for Goldberg. And he was strong on mink. And sitting there all the time, he would buy the mink. And Carter, he liked fox for some reason. He would get that and then the NC would get the rest.
So you could make a couple extra dollars if you took the right fur to the right guy.
That's right. Something I never liked. You never get an itemized bid. It's always average. You don't know what you got for a good skin or a bum one. And I like to know what I get for different fur, you know. Dean Wilson was good on that. He would break everything down.
Now, you mentioned a couple times about sending some furs to New York. Where else have you sold your furs? Have you done it here locally? I'm sure some in Fairbanks.
There's two Canadian outfits now, North American fur sale. They're connected with a Seattle Fur Exchange. Okay. Sometime they would have sale in Seattle, and then next time would be in North Bay. You know. Most of the time I used to send to them.
So you just mail your furs right from here?
You can't send to Canada. I sent it to Seattle and Cariff. Another one is Western Canadian Raw Furs in Vancouver. I like that one, but I had a heck of a time sending fur there lately. You know, I haven't sent fur there for at least 3 or 4 years now.
Just because of the paperwork and the permits?
Well, yeah. There was one time they told me I had $50 for this, and it was over $100 without any link. Well, I want to send a little dab of fur. Well, it would cost me more to
send it than you would get back.
Yeah. If we can get Western Canadian raw furs to have an agent in Seattle, that would solve all the problems. Then guys send the fur there, and they could make one paper out for the whole business.
Now, I know at one time there was a cooperative here in Fort Yukon that was, as I remember, trying to collect all the fur from all the trappers. How did that work out?
What happened is a lot of guys sloughed off all their bum fur and then sold their good fur someplace else. I guess they didn't make no go of it. I remember one time, that year we had a lot of links and we sold some, and then we had 70-some links left. So I wrote to Western Canadian there in Vancouver. I told him how many skins we had. Well, they said, send it on. He said, we have about the same amount. And they were going to put them batches, you know. They sold it sometime, I think, in the fall. We got about 18,000 of that deal.
Imagine you wore a lot of your own fur, too, for hats and mittens.
Mittens, beaver skin mittens. And my wife, she made marten hats. Mostly, I'd get some of them that the squirrels on one side, you know.
The ones that wouldn't bring very much at the fur buyer,
no.
So you use them yourself.
I used to patch marten. If it's on one side and they're putting there the same color. I used to cut it right up the middle of the back, right under the arm. A lot of time you couldn't tell it was two pieces unless you put it upside down, shook the hair, you know.
You just trap right here around town nowadays?
Yeah, got about 4 or 5 lines out. About 2 years ago, I went down the river. I used to trap myself, you see. One line up the Sucker River, Harry goes with me, and this time I was all in when I got back here. I thought, what if something had happened halfway back, you know? Mm-hmm. I would have had to camp. I phoned him up. I said, hey, how about going all my lines? He said, that's all right. So since then, I got a couple of little short lines I go myself, you know, but...
So how many miles do you figure that you're running total these days?
That one up over across up Grass River, that is the longest, I think, because I just barely get back here on the one tank of gas. In fact, a couple times I run out before I get here, you know.
So all in all, maybe 100 miles?
All together? Maybe pretty close to that.
Okay, and that's still a lot of line yet to run. Is there any way to sum up your activities in the outdoors?
Well, I ain't doing it for money. Well, it's something that I'm used to and I like. After you get through and you sell your fur, well, then it feels good if you made more than you put into it, you know. And so far, I do pretty good. Even this year, we got about 35 length.
Fred Thomas was a giant in the trapping community. He's gone now, but not forgotten. Tune in again next week when we'll hear more stories from another outdoor expert.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.